Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'm your host, Jackie Marie Beyer. Let's get growing.
Hi, listeners. I'd like to invite you to visit our website at organicgardenerpodcast.com, where you can sign up for our newsletter, download our ebook on organic gardening basics, and get started on building your very own organic oasis today. Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast today. I am very excited to introduce my guest, Elizabeth Weller from Amazing Heart Farm in Pennsylvania. And she's here to share with us some of the amazing work she's doing. She has a beautiful blog and just some great things going on. So welcome to the show today, Elizabeth.
Thank you for having me.
Well, we're excited to learn about your gardening journey and just all the things that are going on your side of the world. So why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself to begin with?
Okay, sure. Just a little background to start off with. I received my undergraduate degree from Sarah Lawrence College in Bronxville, New York. Mm-hmm. And there weren't really any majors at Sarah Lawrence, so you were just kind of encouraged to explore your interests and find an area of study to concentrate on. And my first year studies class was called the Philosophy of Religion. And it was in that class, which was completely life-changing, that I was first introduced to the writings of Wendell Berry. Oh. And when Wendell Berry, yeah, he's a farmer. He's also a teacher and a writer and an environmental activist and an advocate for local food economies. And his writings really first interested me in farming. So then I took a year off from college, and I spent, that was, I guess, between my sophomore and junior year, and I wanted to do some traveling. So I spent 6 months at Rocky Mountain National Park in Estes Park, Colorado, and then I spent a month at the Zen Mountain Monastery in Mount Kemper, New York, and I traveled to California to study at Tassajara and Carmel Valley in California. And when I returned from that, I met up with a friend who I'd met in Colorado who was studying at Shepherd College, which was just maybe 45 minutes from my hometown. It's in West Virginia, and I grew up in Waynesboro, Pennsylvania, which is a small town right on the Maryland border. And she told me about a local farmer who was recruiting students to help out. He had a tree farm and apple orchard, and she invited me to join them. So I did, and I really enjoyed learning about growing food and being part of a business that provided food for the local community. But I think more importantly, I had a really powerful experience of the work on the farm, of its rhythm and the physicality and the community built around it. It's healing, and it's from that experience that I first became interested in farming as a therapeutic tool and spiritual practice. So when I returned to Sarah Lawrence, I really focused my studies on these ideas, and I ended up writing the senior thesis, which was kind of an optional thing. And I focused in on what I call the nature of dialogue and being in relationship with ourselves, each other, and the land. And I explored the idea of community as something that not only includes our relationships with each other, but also our relationships with our watersheds and our food systems and the environment in which we live, and how the health of our environment directly reflects our individual and collective health. So then after I left Sarah Lawrence College, I really wanted to find some way to combine farming and spirituality, or to somehow use farming therapeutically. And I ended up, I worked for a summer down in Lexington, Virginia, working on just interning at a small little retail farm. And then I found a job at a place called Gould Farm, which is located in the Berkshires in Massachusetts. And it's a residential therapeutic community for people who are suffering from various forms of mental illness. And it's built around a model of recovery that's centered around using both community and work as a therapeutic tool. So I was a work leader in the Harvest Barn, and I was in charge of a small group of people from anywhere of the ages of like 18 to 70, and our job was to basically process all of the food that came in from the garden. We worked in the garden a little bit, but we mainly focused on blanching and freezing the vegetables that came in from the garden and making mint teas and pumpkin butters and that kind of thing. And the whole experience was really amazing, but it was such a huge organization. There were probably, you know, I don't know, 150 people living there. There were therapists on staff. You know, it didn't necessarily help me figure out how to start something like it, which was kind of my slightly naive initial goal in going there. So I left after my year was up. I was a little, it was an amazing experience, but I was a little disheartened with the idea of, you know, starting up something of my own. And I had decided to stay in that area, but I ended up getting a job teaching English. And in the meantime, I met my husband and got married, and decided to get my master's in theological studies. And so we moved to Boston to so I could go to Harvard Divinity School. Wow. And it was while I was at Harvard Divinity School that my interest in farming renewed. I met some like-minded people. And so during the school year and then on summer breaks, I worked at a few different farms. My favorite being one called Serving Ourselves Farm, which was a 4-acre plot of land that's located on Long Island, which is one of the Boston Harbor Islands. And it's part of the Long Island homeless shelter. And the farming, it was, you know, people just trying to get back on their feet. And so the social work aspect of the farming really nicely paired with my studies at Harvard, where I was taking classes on everything from pastoral care and counseling and ethics and education and Christianity to, you know, and Buddhism. So in, I think it was, let's see, April of 2008, my husband and I really committed. We bought the place where we're living now. It was a year before I graduated from Divinity School. And decided to just go for it. We were gonna just move down here and do the homesteading thing and try it out. And my initial goal was to develop an agriculturally based center for individuals who've been impacted by some sort of trauma or loss. And my goal wasn't, and it still isn't, necessarily to get involved in production agriculture, but I realized that in order to have an agriculturally based educational or therapeutic space, I needed to establish it as a farm. Yep. So I spent the next several years kind of immersed in gardening books and classes at the Ag Center and meetings with local farmers. And in 2010, we were cultivating maybe a quarter of an acre for a 14-share community-supported agriculture program. And then by 2012, we had over an acre in production, and our CSA had grown to about 40 members.
Wow.
So while I do still have that long-term goal to use the space to help individuals who've undergone trauma or loss over the past few years, my vision has kind of shifted for what that looks like. I think as it's evolved, I basically aim to include all who are interested in participating in the capacity that best serves their needs and ability. So as people need it and the opportunity arises, the space is here, essentially. So I think at this point for me, engaging our CSA members with the work that we do here has really been the most rewarding aspect of running our CSA program. And we've enjoyed sharing our space with the CSA members through volunteer days and potlucks. And we've had Feldenkrais, which is a kind of, Feldenkrais is a mindfulness through movement, kind of yoga slash Tai Chi type thing, effortless gardening retreats, and bodhicitta meditation retreats that are both open to the public and CSA members. And then we've had different cooking classes that are open both to the public and CSA members. And the cooking classes have been run by CSA members. So that's a little bit about the CSA. And then the farm, the sustainability aspect of it is really important to us. We're certified naturally grown, which is a grassroots alternative to certified organic. And we have a soil conservation plan through the NRCS, the Farm Service Agency. And then in 2012, we installed our second high tunnel, which is an experiment in it's kind of in progress. It's we installed hugelkultur beneath it, which is an ancient form of sheet composting in which rotting wood and other organic material are buried beneath mounds of topsoil. And as that buried wood decomposes, it builds soil fertility and improves drainage and moisture retention, and produces heat. So the base, sometimes it's above the soil, and what we did is, because we found out whenever we cleared the area for the high tunnel that that section of our property is clay soil, we decided to dig out under the high tunnel. So we dug out 2.5 feet and we filled it with like 30 cords of wood, I think 40 mid-sized bales of hay that was already decomposing, 25 yards of leaf mulch, and 40 yards of mushroom soil, which I wouldn't do the mushroom soil again just because it really increased the soluble salts since it's covered. But the it's decomposing to a really beautiful soil, and it no longer floods. The area used to flood, and we installed it right before Hurricane Sandy came through, and it didn't flood at all. We were kind of amazed because the area really used to flood. So, and then the other thing that we do is we start our seedlings in a greenhouse that's heated by solar thermal, and the walls of the greenhouse are made from polycarbonate plastic siding. So it uses passive solar to heat the greenhouse during the day, and then a solar thermal system keeps the floor temperature in the greenhouse between like 70 and 80 degrees during the winter months.
Nice.
And in the summertime, that excess energy is tied into a system in our house to heat the hot water. So that's kind of how we, that's a little bit about the farm and some of my philosophical background and how I ended up doing what I'm doing.
Awesome. I think listeners are going to really enjoy this because I think a lot of listeners have some very similar beliefs to you do. I know I do. I have a lot of questions, and I love that you just traveled so much and got all these experiences when you were trying to figure out how you wanted it to all come together. And I think that's probably makes your place a very extra special place for people to go, because you do have all those experiences and you took your time figuring it out and putting it together, and it just sounded like you were all over the place. And my mom, I remember always hearing stories about Carmel in California.
Oh yeah. Yeah, it's a beautiful place. Oh my goodness. Really special spot.
Do you want to tell us about your very first gardening experience? Like, how old were you? Who you're with? What'd you grow? Mm-hmm. Do you remember your very first gardening experience?
Very first? I grew up gardening, but it wasn't really vegetables, you know? I grew up, my parents had a lot of gardens, but it was more flowers, and mm-hmm. I just remember weeding a lot, you know?
Oh.
So I feel like my very first kind of gardening experience was really the experience that I described just now, mm-hmm. going to the apple orchard and working on the apple orchard and tree farm. I don't remember, really, I mean, my mom might've had a few tomatoes, but I don't remember. I just remember kind of weeding the flower beds, you know, and thinking of it as a chore. When I was growing up.
Okay. Do you want to share with us what organic gardening or earth-friendly gardening means to you?
Well, there's a great quote from The Unsettling of America by Wendell Berry, where he says, "The farm can exist only within the wilderness of mystery and natural force. And if the farm is to last and remain in health, the wilderness must survive within the farm. That is what agricultural fertility is, the survival of natural process in the human order." And that's the end of the quote. And I think that organic gardening is about paying attention to the natural process. I think it's about learning the names of things, of recognizing and respecting who we live among. And by that, I mean the plants, insects, rocks, rivers, the soil. And I feel like I'm just a beginner at that. There's this book I'm reading right now called The Forest Unseen by David Haskell, where he writes about taking just a small section of the forest in the shape of a mandala and studying it for about a year. He's down in Tennessee, he's a biologist. And he just goes out every day and observes. And then he writes a book about it, which is fascinating. And there's just so much to learn in our own backyards. And I think that to learn from nature, it's important that we maintain a beginner's mind. that we don't just rush out and make changes without thinking about the consequences. So that's kind of what I think as far as what organic gardening and earth-friendly gardening means.
I like that. And I, you know, before I started my podcast, I had never even heard of Wendell Berry. But then since I've had it, several people have mentioned it. And then I just read a whole bunch of, can't remember if it was a website or something about him. So okay. I'm glad you brought that up. And then, cool, a new book, The Forest Unseen. So I'll put the link to that
so good.
In the show notes, too, if people want to check that out.
Okay.
I'm sure they do. And especially with winter coming on, it's a good time to be talking about gardening books.
As far as certifications, we are certified naturally grown, which is a grassroots alternative to certified organic. And I sit on the board of directors for Certified Naturally Grown. It's an organization that I believe in. Certified Naturally Grown assures that food labeled as such is produced without synthetic chemicals or genetically modified organisms. It has a unique peer review certification process that is affordable, which is a big deal for small farmers like myself. But more importantly, being involved with CNG has been an effective way for me to engage community members around growing healthy food and farming sustainably. It's been a way for me to network with and learn from other farmers and teach interns and students and my CSA members not only about what my growing practices are, but also about why these practices are of value. For example, I don't know, maybe a year or two ago, we were having an inspection here, and there was a student who was volunteering, and she happened to be here during the inspection, so she joined in. And one of the questions for the inspection, or they just tell you, actually, to go out and dig in the soil and look for earthworms, because that's an indicator of a healthy soil. So we grabbed a pitchfork, and we went out and we found some earthworms. And you could tell the student at first was a little squeamish, you know, she wasn't so sure about the worms. And so we explained, you know, well, worms are like little plows and they help aerate the soil and they build the soil fertility. And you could kind of see her perspective shift a little bit. And it was just a wonderful teaching moment. And that's just like one example of an opportunity that, you know, of just being able to describe or having a chance to explain why we're growing the way that we do and why it's of value. And then the other thing about CNG, a lot of times people will ask how it's different than certified organic. And one of the obvious things is the peer review system, inspection system. But another thing, too, is that CNG is specifically for community-based farms selling in local markets. It's not for agribusiness operations supplying wholesale markets and not processed food manufacturers. So I just wanted to put that out. And it does require less paperwork, and it has lower certification fees, which is pretty cool. So I'm pretty proud to be part of the organization. Yeah.
Nice. I think people are really going to like that. I think that's an important part of gardening today and giving people an option. And I think in a lot of ways, it almost means more than the certified organic. It's nice to have another option out there. So
it
I'm
is.
Glad that you're sharing that. And I think it's growing around the country, and that you're a board member is a wonderful thing. So I hope if people have questions, they'll reach out to you or... they'll go to your website, and then we have the link to the Certified Naturally Grown website, too, where they can learn more information about it. Then what inspired you to start using organic techniques? Was it working on that apple orchard, or, like, how did you decide that that's what you wanted to pursue?
I think just being introduced to the idea of farming, or the idea that I might want to farm, by, you know, being introduced to the idea by Wendell Berry. I didn't really know I didn't know another way. You know, it's not like I was introduced to it through conventional means. And, you know, all the farms that I've interned on or worked on have been, organic or earth friendly, you know, have if they haven't been certified organic, they've used natural practices, you know. Mm-hmm. So I really just didn't know. It was just kind of the obvious way, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And so, should I just skip that question? How did you learn to garden organic?
Actually,
I mean, you kind of told us a lot about it, or did you want to add something?
Yeah. Well, the main person who taught me was this guy at the Serving Ourselves farm. His name was Jean-Claude. I don't think he's there anymore, but he was a former chemist for the agricultural industry, and he was so turned off by what he learned or saw in the industry, and he was from France, that he became an organic farmer. And he taught me most of what the basis of all of my knowledge. He was very generous with all of his farming knowledge. He shared all his spreadsheets with me and his farm, you know, charts and maps so then I basically took that knowledge and then took classes at the Ag Center and gardening books and, you know, met and talked to other local farmers down here. But yeah, he's the main person who taught me what I know.
Nice. I like the way you seem to be very interested in educating yourself and pursuing a higher knowledge about the things that you get involved in. So that's awesome. Tell us about something that grew well this year.
Well, here I was actually on maternity leave.
Congratulations.
I have a 7-month, well, she's almost 7 months old, little girl named Hannah. Aww. But I am a consultant for Painted Turtle Farm, which is Gettysburg College's campus. They have a student-run campus farm. Oh. And a lot of things grew really well there. And the first thing that comes to mind is probably the Ripoar kale. It grew really beautifully this year. We had rows of it. So that grew abundantly.
Nice. Okay. So how about something that you think you want to try different or new next year?
I think I want to try, you know, I say this though every year, but I think I want to try purple peas.
Purple peas? Oh my gosh, that sounds like a book. And we read in school today a book about a little boy who hated peas until he finally tried
one. Purple.
Cool.
Every year whenever I'm picking peas, you know, there's every time you walk up and down the row, you keep finding more. And every year I say, you know, if these were purple, it would be so much easier and faster to pick these. So I think this year whenever I'm ordering seeds, which is going to be soon, I'm going to try to find an organic variety. So.
Okay. Cool. So there really are purple peas, and then just the pods are purple, or the peas are actually purple too?
I think just the pods.
I was thinking probably like green beans. Like I remember the first time my husband canned the green beans, the purple beans, and they all turned green as soon as he cooked them. And I was I was so bummed. All right, cool. I can't wait to tell my kids about this tomorrow at school. They're going to be so excited. Tell us about something that didn't work so well this season, like that didn't exactly turn out the way you thought it was going to.
The cauliflower didn't do so well, and I'm not quite sure why. We had a few that did okay, but most of the heads of cauliflower just turned brown, and I want to spend some time figuring out. I looked up one of the reasons might be that there wasn't enough boron in the soil. We were pretty unhappy about that, so I'm going to do some research on that and try to figure that out this winter so we're more successful next year.
Okay, cool. And that's a good tip for listeners, because I've had a lot of people talk, and since I've started the show, I've realized like how important it is to test your soil and find out what minerals are in it and what minerals are missing. And so a lot of people who have been, selling and running a farm for the public for quite a while, it seems to be that's a big key to their success. So that's a good place to start. And I was going to say in the beginning, I like the way you talked about hugel culture. That was something I didn't know before I started my podcast either. And so a few people have talked about that, but you gave a really good explanation for listeners who maybe haven't heard of it. How about something that you find is easy to grow and is generally successful every time in your area?
I think radishes, typically, every spring and fall. And they don't take long to produce. And potatoes are generally pretty easy, and lettuce mixes, I think, too.
And do you just grow, like, the red radishes or the white ones, too? Or there's these really cool ones I got in New York at the farmer's market when I was visiting my mom one winter or summer, spring, I don't know. But they were, like, these watermelon radishes that were really good. Have you tried those?
I've had those before, but I've never actually tried to grow them. I've grown, like, the Easter egg radishes and the Davignon. Those are the main two that I grow.
Okay. How about something you would steer new gardeners away from that you find is typically challenging to grow in your climate?
You know, I don't think I would steer new gardeners away from anything, just because, you know, certain things do better in certain years, and I could go a half mile down the road and something that's not doing well in my garden is doing beautifully, or vice versa. You know, it's just, there's so many factors in play that I think I'd say if new gardeners want to try something, go for it, you know? Maybe don't plant 200 feet of it, but...
That's awesome. That's the greatest advice. I love that.
Try it out, you know? Mm-hmm. I would try it out.
Before we get to the root of things, we're going to thank our sponsors and affiliate links.
Organifi Green Juice is a gently dried superfood mix that supports health, mental clarity, while detoxifying your body, all in one delicious drink. What I love about Organifi, it makes me feel great. It's easy. It doesn't take much time. It's full of nutrients and superfoods that I have a hard time getting anywhere else, and it just tastes delicious. Now, as a teacher, you all know that our time is totally limited. I have kids in my classroom from 7:30 in the morning till 6 o'clock at night. So just even using this simple thing can be difficult for me, but I can pull it off and so can you. If you want to feel good and get all your greens in a simple, easy drink, remember, you can get a discount as an Organic Gardener podcast listener by entering code OGP16, and Organifi will give you a 15% discount now. So just go to Organifi.com, and when you go to checkout, enter code OGP16, and they'll give you 15% off your order anytime. Did you know that you could support the Organic Gardener podcast without doing anything differently? If you're going to buy something on Amazon.com, since I'm an Amazon affiliate, if you go to Amazon through a link on my page, which every book that is listed on my website is linked to Amazon.com, you don't have to buy that book, but anything you buy that day from Amazon will give me a very, very small commission. But I got to tell you, it would sure help pay for, you know, just some of the basics it costs to keep the podcast up there.
And now let's get to the root of things.
What activity is your least favorite activity to do in the garden? Is there something you have to get yourself out there and force yourself to do sometimes?
Oh, gosh, watering. I really am, I'm not a fan of setting up irrigation or hand watering. I'd rather just let the rain take care of it, but sometimes you have to intervene. So sometimes I can get my husband to go out and do the watering.
My husband thinks that way. Sometimes I can get my wife out there.
Yeah, that's probably my least favorite.
Okay, I understand. We had a shortage for water for a long time, and so when you were watering, it takes a long time. Like, we could never put, like, a sprinkler. This is the first year we've really been able to, like, put a sprinkler out and have it spray around the whole thing. Like, it's always been, like, stand there with a, if we're lucky, a hose, usually with, like, a watering can or something, very little. And I can totally, I feel your pain there.
Yeah.
What's your favorite activity to do in the garden then?
Gosh. Well, I love to plant. I love to harvest. I love to start seeds. And I actually, you know, I love to weed, too. I don't like it when it gets to the point where the weeds are so out of control that you feel just totally overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. And you have this long list of other things that you need to do. And, you know, there's something kind of meditative about weeding. So mm-hmm. I basically everything else. I I love to do. The construction stuff is pretty much like constructing the hoop houses. My husband managed those projects. But when it comes to planting and harvesting and transplanting and weeding and mapping out and planting or planning the garden and all of that, I love all of that stuff.
Nice. That's a good one. Got any secrets for like mapping out or planning your garden, since people are going to be starting to think about that now as January comes around and we're starting to order our seeds? Are there any like, you know, tips or strategies that you follow?
I do. It seems to be like a little different every year. I base it on what I've done the previous year, mm-hmm. you know, and, but there are some good spreadsheets out there, different websites. I have, let's see, there's one, Growing Small Farms, which is part of the North Carolina Extension. They have some really good spreadsheets for farm planning and record keeping that I've used in the past that have kind of been the basis that have helped me kind of build my system of record keeping.
Okay, those are great tips. Tell us about the best crop you ever grew. Was there something that was just so prolific you couldn't give it all away and just didn't know what to do with it all?
Oh, gosh. Let me think about that. The kale this year that we at Painted Turtle Farm, we still have more kale than we know what to do with. I mean, and because it's so warm and it's been so warm for so long, I mean, we just have an abundance of kale.
Wow. Okay. What's the best gardening advice you have ever received?
Oh, to take it one day at a time.
That's good. That's really good.
You know?
How about your favorite tool? What's a favorite tool that you couldn't live without if you had to move?
Probably a pickaxe. That's, I think, probably my favorite tool. That and sunglasses and a hat.
Nice. What do you use a pickaxe for?
I use it for a lot of things. I actually use it to plant, to make the furrows in the beds to plant mm-hmm. seeds. And I'll use it to get out the weeds. Like sometimes you just find a sapling in the middle of you know the garden that seems to have just come out of nowhere, and you need a pickaxe to get it out, or you know something with a really deep tap root, or sometimes I use it to help kind of shape the beds because I do a lot of the work by hand, and you know I don't not by tractor. I feel like it's useful for a lot of things.
Mm-hmm. I like that. How about secrets for preserving food or making it last? Do you do any canning or freezing or any of that? You said that you worked at that place where you did a lot of blanching, I guess.
Yeah. We do some canning, mainly of tomatoes, and we'll make sauce and salsa and can it. But the easiest thing, you know, if you have the freezer space, is to freeze. Like, I've frozen whole tomatoes, and then, you know, you just put them under water, and the skins peel right off, and you need them for sauces and soups. And then I've also grated zucchini and frozen it, and then it's ready when you need it for breads or soups. And pickyourown.org, I don't know if you're familiar with that, but
no.
that's a really great resource for food preservation.
Okay.
They have a list of like local farms where if, you know, pickyourown.org where you can look up what's close to you or you can pick your own fruits. But they have lots of different resources for food preservation.
Nice. Okay, I like that. How about special techniques for cooking weird or unusual foods or weird or unusual techniques for cooking ordinary foods?
Well, I'm a pretty... kohlrabi is one of my favorite vegetables, and I get a lot of questions about kohlrabi. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty simple when it comes to cooking. And my favorite way to eat it is just raw. And so my advice is always just to peel it with a knife and to cut it into thin strips like you would a carrot or celery sticks and just eat it like that. So when I get questions about kohlrabi, that's my advice.
Cool. I like that. And I'll bet people are going, wow, I never knew what to do with that. Now I do. How about a favorite recipe you like to cook from the garden? What's your, you know, what do you like to make the most?
I love making beet burgers.
Beet burgers? Yeah, oh, tell me how you make those.
So those, that's just grated beets. And then you add cooked quinoa and, what is it, sunflower seeds and sesame seeds and some onion and soy sauce and olive oil and breadcrumbs. I think the recipe's on my website.
Cool.
And then I bake them. And then you flip them halfway through.
What do you mean you bake them?
I just put them in the oven. Okay. You could fry them.
Oh, okay. Okay. Got it.
And then another favorite is just another really simple recipe, which one of my interns turned me on to a few years ago, which is just a simple massage kale salad, which is just, you know, with the curly kale, which you just add a little olive oil and lemon juice and salt and cranberries and nutritional yeast and just massage it all together, and it's really delicious.
I like that with the cranberry. Now, yeah. Cranberries like dried craisin type of cranberries?
Craisin.
Or like, okay.
Yeah.
I was wondering if you had to cook them, the craisins.
No,
I
no.
love those in salad. I was going today thinking, why don't I have any of these in the house? Okay, cool. Oh, I like that. Do you have a favorite internet resource? You've given us a lot. So what's your favorite one that you go to?
My favorite one is probably, are you familiar with the Food Project?
No.
They're located in Boston. The director of it was a grad from Harvard Divinity School, and they have this section on their website that's called the Toolbox, and you can download files. They have a youth program, so they have like an after school youth program for like farming, and they have it listed out like exactly how their youth program works. So you can download files about that, but then they also have files about their crop plans and their field maps. So that's another resource if you're looking for like record keeping type things, is the Food Project and their Toolbox. You can download anything there.
Nice. All right. I'm really interested in that. I just talked to the guy at my school, asked me if I was going to get their greenhouse going when we came back after Christmas. And I thought it sounded early, but he said it's heated. He said that they usually start the geraniums. They have geraniums, so I'll have to look into that as soon as I get back. But that would be great.
Oh, cool.
To see how they do their after school youth program. Excellent.
Yeah.
All right. Elizabeth, what's your favorite reading material or book or magazine or blog or?
Well, I really, let's see. I like Elliot Coleman's, all of his books are helpful. My favorite kind of blog right now is, have you read Rough Draft Farmstead? It's two farmers and their new parents, and they're homesteading and living off grid, and they write a blog about it basically, and I check in on it periodically. But it's called Rough Draft Farmstead.
Rough Draft? Oh, cute. Like the rough draft, like the first draft of a novel. All right. I like that.
Farmstead,
oh, no, I'll have to check that out. I have not heard of that.
Yeah.
Where are they? Are they in Pennsylvania, or do you know where they're at?
They're, I believe, in Kentucky.
Okay, cool. All right, I'll have to look into that.
Yeah.
So how about some business advice for listeners about maybe how to sell extra produce or how to get started? Or like you could talk about some of the cool things that you did to kind of try out your, you know, figure out where you were going to go. I don't know.
Well, I think what I did is I just started small and built gradually, you know, and I used the CSA model. Which for me has worked really well. And I think if anyone's interested in going that route, a great book to read would be Sharing the Harvest, which is by Elizabeth Henderson and Robin Van Enn. And if another resource would be Wilson College, which is just 30 minutes away from me in Chambersburg, Pennsylvania. They have the Robin Van Enn Center, and they have, if you go to their website, they have reading resources and downloadable files that you can look at on their website about CSAs. But that's really the only model that I know, because that's the route that I went. So
now tell us, like, when you started, like, how many customers did you have when you started?
I had 14 that first 14. Year.
Nice. That sounds like a good group.
Yeah, it was a good starting number. And then now I have 40, and that's, for an acre, I feel like that's pretty good.
Okay. Ready for my final question? Is there anything else you want to tell us that I've forgotten?
I don't think so.
Okay. So here we go. It's a doozy. If there's one change you would like to see to create a greener world, what would it be? For example, is there a charity or organization you're passionate about or project you'd like to see put into action? Like, what do you feel is the most crucial issue facing our planet in regards to the environment, either locally, nationally, or on a global scale?
Well, there's a quote, actually, that I stumbled on the other day by David Orr, where he says, the plain fact is the planet does not need more successful people, but it does desperately need more peacemakers, healers, restorers, storytellers, and lovers of every kind. It needs people who live well in their places. It needs people of moral courage willing to join the fight to make the world habitable and humane. And these qualities have little to do with success as we have defined it. That's the end of the quote. And nice. I think that's kind of it. I think in our culture, we're really focused on getting somewhere, on becoming something other than what we are. I think we're focused on glamour and fame. And I think that the qualities that we need in healing our planet and in healing ourselves are humble and from the heart. And there's this story that I wrote in the first grade. And it's called The Amazing Heart Book. And that's why I named The Amazing Heart Farm The Amazing Heart Farm. And each page is covered with these beautiful images of hearts, like huge hearts with little stick figures and all these colors. And the story reads, "This is the heart of love and the heart of spirit. It is the most important thing. If you touch it, you will be powerful. When you climb it, you are in a beautiful magic land. I know my heart. I love this heart. I wish I could go there, but it is blocked." And then below that last line on the last page, there's this drawing of myself as a young girl. And my arms are kind of stretched toward the sky. And I stand facing this rainbow-colored heart like the size of a mountain. And it's blocked from my reach by this wall that's scribbled with black crayon. And for me, the language of that story speaks most deeply to what we need as human beings, kind of in relationship with ourselves, with others, and with the land. It's about reconnecting with what we value and hold sacred. And I think that when we do this within ourselves, we become more compassionate with all of life. So I think on some level that that's what has to happen for the world to actually change. I think we need to cultivate qualities like empathy, deep listening, and love in our future generations. And then the other thing I think needs to happen is for us to kind of let go of this notion that to be successful when we grow up, we have to leave home, that we have to go out into the world and make something of ourselves. And I'm not saying that it's not okay to leave and go off to college and travel and do all the things that we do. I think that those are important. But I think that we've created a sort of restlessness, like a sense of always looking for the next best thing. And I feel that it's important to set down roots and to really come to know and love a place in a community. Because how can we live in a community, and by community I mean our neighbors and our watersheds and our food sheds, but how can we live in community if we move every 3 years? Having a sustained commitment to one place means that we're responsible for that place. And if everyone cares about and for where they are, I think that our relationships with each other and with the earth would be much healthier. So I think that's kind of what I would like to see, those changes.
That was beautiful. I love that.
Thank you.
Tell listeners how to connect with you.
You can connect with me by on Facebook. And my website is amazingatheartfarm.com, and Facebook, just Google Amazing Heart Farm, and you'll find me. My email is also listed on my website if you'd like to contact me.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you so much, Elizabeth. I know listeners are really going to love this interview. You just were full of not just information, but I think you just kind of touched our hearts the way, you know, people like to think about the planet. And it's just nice to hear somebody else out there doing their thing and sharing your voice with us today. And I know listeners really, they didn't just learn a lot, but I think they're probably like touched spiritually in a way, like knowing that you're out there doing some good and inspiring them to do some good things too.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
I super appreciate it. If you know somebody who would benefit from the Organic Gardener podcast, we would just love it if you would share it with a friend. Thanks again for listening, and remember to grow.